and welcome along, listeners, to yet another fabulous episode of the Changing Room Special. Let's Colour! Lifting the lid. So, Marianne, how are you?
I am very, 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 very well.
Very, 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 very well. Fancy that. There you go. We are doing fabulously after, again, yet another episode of Changing Rooms this week. So we're really excited to get going and I can't wait to see what you think of this week's episode. So we've got a brilliant show lined up for you today after an absolutely fabulous episode last week, being the first ever, not first ever Changing Rooms, of course, but the first episode of the new series
Reloaded.
Of Changing Rooms. Reloaded. Exactly. Which, of course, we discussed last week.
We sure do. So kicking off today's Let's Colour podcast, we're going to deep dive into the latest episode from the show. We'll discuss and review those fabulous designs and give you an insight into what really happened behind the scenes.
Of course. Can't wait to chat through our thoughts this week. And I am, of course, dying to know what you think of this week's episode. And I am dying to let you know what I think as well. Then, Marianne, your favourite part of the show, I'm certain, we will be welcoming our very special guest for today. None other than Mr. Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen will be joining us, a real-life Changing Rooms legend.
I thought it was Sir. Sir Lawrence.
It could well be. I reckon by the time the series is finished, he'll definitely be a Sir for services to interior design and entertainment.
Yeah, he was brilliant, so do listen to that. Then we'll be doing a slightly different Dr. Dulux, as we won't be taking your questions, but we will be telling you how to recreate some of the looks from the show so you can try out some of those techniques for yourself.
And finally, we'll be revealing what we've got in store for next week's episode. So do stay with us throughout the series for even more from us and the show, of course.
I am so excited, Steph. It's another full show. Can we get going, please? I can't wait any longer.
Let's do it. Let's go. So, in the latest episode, we were, of course, in Cardiff, following the journey of Maria and Nick and Teresa and Andrew. So, these guys are neighbours living only a few houses apart. Do we think they're still firm friends after that episode? It was quite an episode, wasn't it? What did you think, Marianne?
Well, Steph, my stomach was so knotted for the whole of that episode.
I know what you mean.
In many respects, this is one of the best episodes for the highest stakes of friendship you could ever take anybody to. And I could hardly breathe until the end.
I know what you mean. I was really nervous. I was really nervous all the way through.
I was.
But, you know, it's kind of what we expect, isn't it, from Changing Rooms, to have a bit of that high tension moment. Do they like it? Do they not? Yeah. Of course they don't like the colours. Of course they've chosen the ones that the homeowner doesn't really like, etc. So, yeah, I know what you mean. I feel still quite nervous talking about it.
You know how it physically gets you when you sort of see colours and you're thinking to yourself, I know these guys know what they're doing, but I'm not entirely sure. And, you know, we're talking about Jordan and Russell.
Yeah.
I personally think that Sir Lawrence, he always pushes it a little bit, you know, and he pushed it a little bit with the black and he pushed it just a little bit, but just far enough. And then he introduced some amazing elements at the end. It all kind of came together despite it. But Russell and Jordan, they just didn't seem to get it. Kind of, I wasn't sure that the colours were... It was amazing polar opposite design.
Yeah.
Two takes on Italian style. I mean, two amazing takes on Italian style. And they were both... in their own way, spot on. But oh my goodness, every time, every colour was popped, every element that came in, I was going, oh no. I love Tibby's work.
Tibby's work was amazing.
It was amazing. Mm. But oh my goodness. It did look incredible in the end, but I'm not sure whether those tears were tears of joy or tears of abject horror.
I know what you mean. It's a bit jury's out to me, I think, on that one. It's a bit jury's out. But, well... should we start? Should we dive in deeply into each of the designs so that we can really unpick what we like and what we don't about it? Because this one was definitely edge of your seat kind of stuff, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
So let's go with Teresa and Andrew first of all. They had Blingissimo. That's my best Italian accent there.
Yes.
And this was all about kind of bringing back that kind of classic Venetian style, wasn't it?
Something but in a modern take. So this was kind of like, he described it as bringing Sophia Loren to Cardiff, which I really like. So it was that real, and you could feel the opulence. And I really loved what he was going to do. I really saw that she was going to like it. I was a bit worried about the black. But one of my favourite things, well, there's lots of elements in there that I think that he did was incredible and that really came to the fore. One of them was the ombre effect.
I loved that.
Loved it. Really subtle, really, really clever. Mm. Just drew your eye up the wall. I absolutely loved the ceiling as well.
Oh, I think the ceiling made
very
it.
Very ambitious.
I think without the ceiling, that room actually would have just been quite plain. Yeah. But yeah, I really loved that ceiling effect. And that light fitting was amazing.
I loved that light fitting. This idea, and this is happening all the time now, people drawing your eye up to the ceiling, using that ceiling as a real showcase for the room. And so I thought that was absolute genius. And of course, masking tape, which we all love.
We love masking tape.
That was the most brilliant use of masking tape. And I really, really, really loved the mirror.
The mirror.
That was so clever. Yeah. It's really beautiful. I didn't think it was going to work, especially when you saw what was happening. I was thinking, oh, this is going to be a dog's dinner.
Yeah.
But it was beautiful.
It did actually turn out all right in the end. So we were actually watching this episode together, weren't we?
Yeah.
And when we were putting that silver leaf, or Maria, more to the point, was putting that silver leaf all over that acrylic, we were thinking, oh my word, this is going to look terrible. Yeah. But actually, that effect actually worked really, really well.
It was beautiful. You just saw the edge of it. It was absolutely beautiful. And I love the pops of black. I actually know you didn't like the tiling so much on the fireplace, but I quite like that. Mm. I like that kind of real, that was modern to me, that sort of real kind of like pop of gold and black. And I didn't like it when I saw the tiles, but when I saw it on, it was really, really beautiful.
Yeah.
So it's classic, it's elegant. Love the painted concrete. That concrete was really, really modern, but it was classical at the same time. I did actually think that what he'd done was combined this real classy look with some touches of modernity, and the materials, you know, concrete material is so, you know, it's so on trend, it's so modern. But I love that, and I'll have a go at that. Definitely have a go at that.
Yeah, no, it was really great. Going back to one of the first things we talked about on that, I wanted to revisit the ombre, because I thought that was really, really clever. We're going to talk a little bit more about it later in the show as well, in terms of how we do it. But one of the things that I thought was great about this room was that the actual kind of colour choice of the backdrop of the room, I thought, was quite clever. So we mentioned the black, and I'll come on to that in a second. But I actually really liked the combination of the woodland trail, which was the...
Was that the deeper colour at the
it
bottom?
It was the deeper colour, And I've got my fingers out doing like all of the feeliness. Because it kind of had that, I think we've talked about it on a show, a bit of a greyish kind of colour to it. So it wasn't a dark grey, but it wasn't like a brown either. Mm. It was that really lovely kind of in between. And I thought that was a really, really good choice, actually, against the mustard and some of the accents on that ceiling panel. Because I think if you would have used just grey, just grey with the concrete, with the floor, it just actually would have felt quite cold.
Yeah.
So I really liked that use of using almost like a warm neutral to add to that space a bit more kind of texture rather than just going for like a kind of grey backdrop to do that classic thing.
Yeah.
So
but
I really
like that. But in the concrete, so as a kind of contrast, so it wasn't, even though the walls, you thought they were grey, they weren't. There were these lovely sort of woody tones, but the concrete was grey. And so with the concrete, they'd used a combination of colours, a chic shadow, pebble shore, natural slate, and rock salt. These are all what we would call true greys. So they don't have any other colour in them. And it just added that kind of real crisp, kind of like real zingy modernity to it. I loved that. And it just made the ombre... It made it even more special. That was really beautiful.
Yeah, no, I definitely like that. We've got to talk about the black. I don't think the black was a winner in Teresa's eyes when she saw it in the reveal. I loved it.
I loved it.
I do like black, though.
Yeah.
I think black as, you know, actually just a colour choice on a wall or a feature in, you know, a kind of, not the whole room, don't get me wrong, but on a, you know, a bigger piece of wall. Is a really lovely way to use that colour, but I also love it in an accessory, you know, just to kind of give that striking bit of like strength, I guess, into a scheme. Yeah. I thought it was really great.
Except,
I know what you're going to say.
I'm going to say the crushed velvet curtains.
I didn't like the curtains. I thought that was a bit too much, personally.
It was a bit of a cape.
It did look that. I think Lawrence actually said it was like his Dracula cape.
I just thought they were. I thought if they'd been white, or even if they'd been a really lovely kind of like warm grey, they would have been great. But that was the thing that let it down.
I wasn't a fan of the curtains. I thought the black on black, because they were both together, weren't they? It was sort of black around the window with the black on top.
Yeah.
Maybe a bit too much. Yeah. Wasn't so sure on that.
Loving what he did with the vases. Love the idea of upcycling vases that were otherwise ugly. And I thought they were really lovely. I really liked the ones where you'd just kind of get a flash of ones that just been painted white and just been painted black. Yeah. And they worked really well for me. I think that's such a lovely idea. You know, a bit of paint to upcycle something that you could buy, you know, for £1 in a charity shop cupboard sale. I love that kind of thing.
All up for a bit of upcycling, aren't we? Yeah. And equally, you don't have to necessarily use any of those kind of painty, like aerosol finishes either. You know, it doesn't have to be like enamel finishes from a can. You can quite easily recreate that with a really good primer, like a Dulux difficult surface primer.
Yeah.
And you can just put any paint over the top of that.
Yeah.
And it will work just as well.
Yeah,
so
quick drying stuff. It's just, it's incredible.
Yeah, and a great way to use up paint leftovers as well. So really good point. I liked all of the kind of work there. And of course, the reveal. Did I can't work it out still. Did Teresa like it?
I don't know, because I think they were so... I think the poor woman was so nervous about her friend's makeover.
Yeah,
I think
that
just completely got to her. And she could tell something had gone on. And it was such high stakes. And I felt so sorry for the partners. Her husbands were just trying so desperately to pour oil on the water. What was going on underneath?
I'd
love to hear the kind of nation. I think that's the Gogglebox.
That's the Gogglebox
moment.
They
are definitely Gogglebox moment in those.
But I did like Andrew, though. You know, at the end, he was like, "Well, I like it." Yeah, I was like, "Good for you, Andrew.
Yeah.
You tell her."
I think it's the first time he'd probably ever piped up about
on TV. That's the way to do it, Andrew.
So we have to talk about Les Is Amore.
Les Is Amore.
Les Is Amore.
So this was a Maria and Nick's makeover, which was in their living dining space, wasn't it?
Yeah.
What did you think?
Well, I think you could have swapped those two rooms around and probably... No, actually, you couldn't. No. Well, I like the idea of gelato against, you know, neutral colours. I love that. I love this sort of... a different take on Italian heritage. I thought that was really lovely. I like... And she was a real kind of, like, amazing character in herself. And I thought she could take strong colour.
Oh, yeah.
But maybe not those.
Yeah.
And I thought that the whole, the finished room, I suppose what, I thought the dining table was lovely. I thought the divide was lovely. But I thought they'd lost their sofa. They'd lost a place to sit as a family. They'd lost this comfort in the area. And that was a big mistake, because even though there was a cream sofa there before, I could see you could actually relax on that cream sofa. And then in that new space, you probably couldn't relax. But joyful colour... I think that, you know, Russell and Jordan do joyful minimalism so beautifully. And this is joyful. It's full of joy. However, it had the complete opposite effect, I think.
Do you know what? Of all of the designs, because obviously we've been working on this project for a while, haven't we? And we have seen the designs kind of come through. And I did think, ooh, these are some strong choices. But then... when you meet Maria on the show, you think, okay,
she's going to like this.
She is, and she is clearly a strong character. Yeah. I mean, I loved her. I thought she was great. She was feisty to the extreme.
Wonderful.
I loved her. But I just thought, oh, those are some really strong choices, all at the same time as well. So I was almost dying to find out what it was actually going to look like in reality, because it's really difficult to see it on a flat design and then see it come to life, obviously, in 3D.
There were some lovely touches. I love the lights. I love the... there were some lovely touches on the wall. I love the tabletop. It's beautiful. Tibby, again,
really
pulling it out of the bag with his carpentry. It's just so clever, so beautiful. That divide was beautiful. And individually, the colours were amazing, but
do you know what I did like? And I think we were saying this as we were watching the show. I actually do like the colours. I just wouldn't maybe put them all together for the function that a living and dining space demands.
Yeah.
You know, I was saying to Marianne, I actually, the cucumber water, which is the colour green that they used on the stripes, I like that colour. There's nothing wrong with that colour at all. I can imagine it. And the striped ceiling in like a kind of kid's bedroom, you know, kid's bedroom. That would be a brilliant use for that colour. And I also loved the purple. We talked about the purple actually in a previous episode on the podcast. That particular purple was called Prom Queen.
Mm-hmm.
And it is like purple. It's exactly like a prom queen, you know, exactly what you imagine. But together, along with that coral charm, it was definitely a feast for the eyes, wasn't it? Mm. And I kind of had a reservation exactly like you about the living element of the living room. Mm. Like, that's kind of been missed.
The relaxing element. The entertaining element was there, tick, tick, tick.
Oh, the dining space I loved with that table. Yeah, the living component of the living space. I felt they should have had a real sofa.
Yeah.
They shouldn't have built that.
Do you think that cream sofa will be back in there? I reckon it would.
Hopefully not the cream sofa, but maybe an alternative sofa.
It was all right.
I don't know. Anyway, for me, it was a bit of a step too far doing the old, I can't even say it, mammolium on the
mammolium,
sofa?
Mammolium. Yeah,
you had to teach me what that was. I had absolutely no idea.
Yeah.
It's very retro.
No, I think in a hot day, you'd stick to that. I don't think Lawrence would be able to get off that if it was a hot day, would he?
In his leather trousers as well. That's not going to work, is it? No. So, all together... Oh, we didn't talk about the reveal, of course. What do we think Maria really thinks of this? I couldn't work it out.
It was obvious. She was horrified.
Do you think
I do think she was horrified. I think there were elements she loved, because there are elements that are lovely in there. And I mean, the dining table, and there were some elements that you loved. But it must be the most incredibly overwhelming experience.
That's what I was thinking.
Because if you really love your friends and really love your neighbours, the last thing you want on earth is to be able to inflict something with them. They have to undo, you know, and there might be things in there that they would undo. I actually don't think there's a lot in there. I think there's maybe the odd tweak, and, you know, she'll get it to something that she really likes. But I think I can imagine putting a camera on you and me and saying, right, you know,
react
now. Yes. I think it'd be very hard to keep it off your face. But what good grace and warmth and kindness that she said that she really, really loved it. Though I have to say, I don't think she did.
I think she maybe 60% liked it. I think she was warming to it as we were seeing her reaction unfold.
Yeah.
I think she was looking around thinking, okay, there are bits.
Yeah, I hope so. I really hope so, because I wanted to put my arms around her when I saw that thing. I think I wanted to give her a group hug. This poor kid. But yeah, it is actually, we're looking at a picture of the finished room, and it is beautiful. And full of sunshine. It is beautiful. It is beautiful. I'm just not sure whether it was for her.
Yeah.
She was ready for it.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a thing of beauty to look at. And this is where, for me, design has to be clever as well as aesthetically lovely to look at. It's great. If you like joyful minimalism to look at in someone else's house, this is for you. But if that's just not your aesthetic, and actually your family doesn't function in that way... You know, then over and above everything, good design has to be about being able to live in the space. And I'm just not sure this was as thought through on that respect.
She's had such a big personality. Maybe that would be perfect. Perfect. But anyway, we shall see.
We shall see. I kind of want to meet Maria now just to see what she thinks for sure. As you can tell, we obviously have our own opinions on this week's episode, but we would love to know what you think too. So if you want to join in our conversation, then pop us a DM on our Facebook or Instagram pages and let us know what you think of the show and those fabulous designs that we saw this week. We would love to know your highlights, so do get in touch.
So let's continue our changing rooms journey with our very special guest for today's episode. Today we are joined by Sir Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen himself, legend of changing rooms past and present.
Now, we have been looking forward to this moment for a while, Lawrence, haven't we?
We have
been looking forward to it? Because we first met Lawrence back in September so that he could be fully inducted into the world of Dulux. Now, that seems like a long time ago, but we had such a great day with him and the rest of the production team, and we even got you doing some hands-on stuff, didn't we? With paint.
I think I touched something at some point. I may have sprinkled my love in. But you were marvellous inductors. If nothing else, I think we should forever say that the pair of you were queens of inductment.
Excellent. Oh, I love that. Let's record that and use it in our reviews later this year.
Well, so much seems to have happened. So much seems to have gone on. I mean, obviously, one of the big things is that we've been battling the COVID restrictions. Well, actually, battling is not really the right word, because, I mean, obviously, we've been very much embracing how the government suggests that we need to keep each other safe. But it does, it's a particularly difficult thing to absorb within the context of a show like Changing Rooms, which is about energy and movement and ultimately breaking neighbours' hearts through the medium of what colour you paint their wall. And the other thing, of course, it's probably one of the huggiest shows ever conceived on television. I mean, the amount of huggeration that goes on, for good or bad, sometimes you're consoling somebody, sometimes you're celebrating with them that they very much like what's gone on. But I'm pretty proud that we've actually managed to do it. There were so many moments where it felt as if it was going to be something that would defeat us. But no, the huge energy, the swell behind the enthusiasm for bringing Changing Rooms back has absolutely motivated us to make sure that the series got made and got made so damn good, so damn fine.
How, Lawrence, I'm going to take you back in time a little bit. Just, and I know you've probably been asked this question so many times. Why do you think the first series was so successful?
I think people were taken by surprise more than anything. I think that and up until that point, home had a very small representation on television, and it was done in a very gentle, quite middle class way. There was a lot of gentle guitar music and, you know, sort of very referential makeovers. And it was people who were great, like Jocasta Innes, who was a great, great, great icon of paint in the 80s and 90s. The august Kevin MacLeod, the august, slightly judgy Kevin MacLeod. And so these were quite niche programmes. They were quiet programmes. Changing Rooms absolutely drove a dumper truck through that because it was entertaining, it was incredibly fast moving. And of course, the big thing that really set people alight was the fact that it felt so real. Changing Rooms literally was the first reality show, because when you were watching it, you would see as much of the stuff that went wrong as the stuff that went right. You know, things weren't contrived, things weren't set up. Before then, everything in a home show was very choreographed and people would sort of waft and look lovely and then explain in a quite schoolmarmy way how to interior decorate or how to paint a wall or whatever. Suddenly we were just doing it and doing it in front of your eyes. And also I think the other thing was that the changes, as we called them at the time, because it was before the term makeover was invented, the changes felt incredibly vibrant, incredibly strong. You know, we wanted to take these very, very quiet rooms and make them a lot more exciting, because that was sort of happening. The other thing that was, of course, big behind the Changing Rooms ethos was the fact that we as designers were operating or used to operating in a very specific, quite kind of high ticket sphere. The idea of dumping us in a very straightforward suburb of somewhere like Redditch, which is somewhere where you would never normally find design, let alone designers. And this is such an extraordinary thought now. But actually back then, back in the mid-90s, there was no, you know, there was no sort of designer high street branding. There were no real kind of high street interior design solutions. Actually, design was something that you bought from Harrods. And it was something that only very, very wealthy people were interested in, let alone could afford. And part of the joy of the format was the idea that we, as rather upmarkety, rather uppity, rather fancy pants designers, were then being forced to work with clients who weren't design literate in the way that we were used to, but also to work within a time frame that we wouldn't normally even consider 2 days, which is ridiculous, and to actually paint walls, for goodness sake. You know, normally designers just sat at the back of the room with a long ebony cane saying, "You've missed a bit."
That one.
Yeah. I was slightly different because obviously my training, my whole background was in fine art. So I was, I had a much more sort of practical enjoyment of making rooms. And even though I was doing a lot of very, very upmarket, very, you know, very high profile schemes in conjunction with the work I was doing on Changing Rooms, actually, even those, I would include a lot of my own painting. I would paint a ceiling. I would do a paint effect. I would do this. I would do that. Just really, I mean, I liked it. I always liked being on site with everybody. I liked being one of the workforce, if you like. You know, there was a sense of real camaraderie to it, and it's a sense of really building it together. And I think that's something that really coloured the way that I then approached Changing Rooms and have approached all of the programmes ever since. That actually, and I think this has been a big surprise for people, even this in the reboot, is the fact that I'm not remote on site at all. I am very, very hands-on about everything. Yeah. I wanted do things. I mean, we've been incredibly, incredibly well served with the Dulux workforce, who just have done the most incredible things. Their skills are exceptional. But actually, you know, I want to be one of them as well. And I have been, and which they've hated.
Of course. Well, we, you know, I didn't want to say they have complained, Lawrence.
I'm there kind of saying, right, well, you do this. And they go, yeah, we do.
Sure.
Why don't you go over there and, you know, arrange some flowers or something?
Lawrence, it was always one of the lovely things that I loved about it was the fact that you could paint.
Mm.
You know, it was hugely impressive that you could pick up a paintbrush and you knew what to do with it, and you kind of you entertained us with that as much as with your personality and your trousers, of course. But it was great.
Well, I mean, I'll let you into a small secret, and that's that I was used to use the painting as my that was my seventh cavalry. If I felt that the scheme was looking pants beyond pants by the middle of day two, I'd then do an 18th century painting above the fireplace, of covering my arse. You know, the hope always was that the homeowners would come back in, open their eyes and go, well, the sofa cover's a bit moody and I'm not sure about the light fitting made of cable ties, but oh my God, he's done an 18th century painting. That's got to have some value.
How are you enjoying working with the new team, Russell and Jordan, Anna, Tibby? Tell us about them.
I don't really see much of Russell and Jordan because obviously, you know, there's a real sense of sort of opposite number in this. Mm. And actually, with the format of this first series, you know, it's me versus Russell and Jordan. And they obviously have an incredibly different approach to everything on the planet compared to me. Even the fact that they are so vegan, and obviously I am so covered in leather, would suggest that there's a real difference. And in fact, I think one of the things that I found quite amusing is that a lot of the time, and I've been looking at a lot of the press stills and stuff like that, that there are Russell and Jordan, so pink and rosy-cheeked and happy and smiley, bedecked in, you know, pastel-coloured crepe de chine with a big brooch and stuff like that. And there's Anna, and there's all this sort of, you know, lightness and brightness. And there's me in the corner looking as if I'm haunting my own television show. I literally look like I've just come from, you know, the final series in 2004, shaken the grave dust off my leather trousers. And I'm standing in the corner looking rather menacing against a background of purple panelling.
You have looked quite menacing, I have to say. Yeah.
The gods and monsters factor.
I think it very much is. I mean, they are definitely the boys of lightness and brightness. And, you know, and I think that this is one of the things that I think people are going to really, really enjoy about the programme is that there is that kind of familiarity. There is that panto to changing rooms that was always there. Which again was very different for television back in the 90s. The fact that it didn't actually take itself too seriously. None of us took ourselves too seriously because we didn't know we were supposed to. We weren't television presenters. We weren't ever there to make the television. We were there to make the room. And then you had these camera guys that were filming all of that. And that certainly hasn't changed. And of course, you know, Anna now has she's fitted in beautifully. I mean, she's got exactly the right kind of crisp, starchy, but amusing attitude for it. The only distracting thing is that, of course, you look at her and all you can think about is naked bits.
That is true.
Dodgy moment on location a couple of weeks ago where she was wandering around the catering tent with a large plate of sausage rolls, which is an image I'll never get out of my head. You know, suddenly I was back on Naked Attraction.
Asking for the innuendo there, isn't she, really? Walking around with sausage rolls. Yeah.
But, I mean, one of the great delights is Tibby. I mean, he's so incredibly dedicated to building the rooms, to making them special. He really wants to get under the skin of what we're doing. He really wants to understand what we're doing. And I think that this is one of the things that really needed to happen and had to be done very cleverly, which is that the guys that we're working with to build the rooms, in the first iterations, there was always that sort of frisson of tension that, you know, the designer would flounce in and say, darling, I'm going to do it terracotta. And, you know, there'd be a lot of kind of head scratching. Whoa, terracotta? What's terracotta? Like it was a Carry On film. And they were Sid James and the designer was Kenneth Williams. But actually, that doesn't reflect where we are now. You know, actually, everybody's so incredibly design literate. I mean, you know, you employ a decorator, you employ a carpenter. You know, they're not a horny-handed son of the sod like they've been written by Shakespeare. Actually, they know all there is to know about making a room special. And I think this has been wonderful. And again, I think that the Dulux team, Team Dulux, yay! They've been so instrumental in this because there's this sort of real enthusiasm, sort of real infectious excitement, this kind of artisanal excitement about doing something like a paint effect or graining or dragging or tronloy. And with Tibby, it's, yes, wonderful, let's build that bookcase, let's make that coffee table, let's indeed make that sex wing and see, you know, see how we can do it perfectly.
You're giving our listeners some previews here. Now they're definitely going to tune in for that.
Sadly, I don't think we're allowed to actually refer to it as a sex swing in the program.
That is,
we all know where I'm coming from. It's based on the floating palace in Udaipur. Need I say more?
Well, yeah, we have seen that episode, and it's a great one, isn't it? So we're going to get some truth out of you here, because no one listens to this anyway, so it's fine. It's just us.
I'm listening.
Yeah. Okay. So, do you really like the two LG designs? Can we say that? You can be truthful with us. Do you really like them?
There have been some that I think work really, really well. And I'm sure they'll say the same about mine. I think the thing about 2LG is it has a very, very strong flavour. And one of the things that I've always tried to do with my rooms on changing rooms is actually skip around stylistically. I mean, yeah, I have an approach, and my approach is very full fat. So if I'm going to do Baroque opera, it's going to be ultra Baroque opera. But then again, I might do minimalism the next week because I'm fascinated in all of these different design languages.
Yeah.
And in which case, my minimalism will be so super minimal, you'd be able to cut carrots on it. And I think that one of the things that Russell and Jordan, they're going to find as the series goes on, that actually there's a way of refining your style, and there's a way of reconfiguring your style to actually give it a really fresh newness, to not use the same kind of shapes, to not use the same kind of colour palettes. And one of the things that I feel with what they do, obviously, you know, what they do is about super, super styled styling. Mm. And it looks amazing on the cover of a brochure. It looks amazing on the cover of a magazine. Actually, these are people's homes. These are living rooms. These are rooms in which people live. They also have four walls. They're not a room set with two walls. And one of the things that I've always felt is very important in home decorating is strong contrast. I think that's, you know, if there's one element that I will always give you, regardless of style, it's the fact that I will give you strong contrast, because I very much believe that's how you make a room feel better. You know, if you want to make a room feel brighter and lighter and bigger, you have to have something very dark at the center of it, so that it's a lodestone, so that you can appreciate how far away and how pale and misty and horizon-like the other walls are. And I think that there were a couple of times where some of their schemes lacked that sense of, you know, real punchy contrast, that a lot of the tones felt very beautifully put together, you know, very Milano, very gelato, lots and lots of lovely, lovely mouth-watering ice cream tones. But actually, sometimes you know, even with ice cream, you know, you need a bit of chocolate in there, or you need a slug of, you know, double espresso, you know, or a bit of grappa. You know, there's that moment where you've got to have that bam away from it.
Yeah.
But one of the things I find highly amusing was that all too often, I would see what they were doing, and I just felt as if I'd walked into my own legacy. You know, they'd be doing something that was so ridiculously changing rooms. You know, I go, what, you're doing that? Wow, you're doing a big MDF archway and you're painting it pink. Wow, this must be changing rooms.
That's only one place for that, for sure.
Beautifully diplomatic. Yeah, a lovely, yeah. A
but
lovely
spiky at the same time.
Oh, it's trademark LLB right there.
Trey Tart.
I'm going to bring the tone of the conversation right down and talk about your leather trousers. Go on, then. Because we've been watching all of the episodes, and were they hot?
No.
It was so hot when you were filming.
It wasn't. You know, I mean, people, I think people are slightly disappointed that the whole leather thing isn't actually a hideous affectation. Actually, leather is extremely good workwear. And this is something that, in fact, most, you know, most artisans would agree on right the way up until the 20th century. If you look at, you know, the Elizabethan period, look at the Middle Ages, you know, actually leather is there for a reason. It's very hard wearing. And it is literally breathable, unlike the vegan leather that the other two wore every now and again, which allowed absolutely no moisture out. And literally, they'd end up with these sort of, you know, we'd be standing doing a piece to camera, and there'd be pools trickling out of their vegan leather shoes. Whereas it was me, everyone was saying, "But you, how can you stand there in black leather?" I go, "Listen, I'm super fine. I'm perfectly comfortable in what I'm wearing." But I mean, the leather thing started, I think it was about the second ever series. And the first series, I was wearing denim trousers of some description. It wasn't anything really sort of special. But I just remember getting very bored because all you needed to do was just kneel on a dust sheet and there'd be a little spot of emulsion there. And that was it. You can't, yeah. You know, obviously denim is a very, very absorbent surface.
There we go.
And, but leather, scratch it off. I mean, you know, I'd go back to the hotel and, you know, you ask the Dulux team, they were just sort of always mystified by the fact that I'd leave location late the night before, get back to the hotel, spend a couple of minutes scratching, maybe with a Brillo pad, and then the next morning, shazam, completely transformed.
There we are. So you've heard it here. Top tip for decorating wear.
Yeah, yeah. Black leather trousers. Yeah,
there you are. White clean.
It's like always wear leather, always drink gin. Two top
Excellent.
Tips for decorating.
Two top tips from you. You've heard it here first, people. Well, there you go. I've learned something new today. Always wear leather when you're decorating. So now, we cannot reveal, of course, any of the real specifics of the designs coming up because we don't want any spoilers for the people listening to this podcast. Oh, well, we've said that now, but that's okay because I feel like that's a teaser that people will tune in for.
Definitely.
That's definitely a teaser. But did you have a favourite scheme or a favourite design that you can tell us about and then we can look forward to seeing
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. And it's Leeds. And
Leeds, yes.
It's
that
funny
was a good
because,
one.
Well, it was the one that had the most constraints. So it was a project in a community housing apartment. And the lease was very specific about not being allowed to engage with the fabric of the building at all.
Right.
So this is the one that you're going to watch if you're a renter. So I couldn't put up shelves. I couldn't put up a dado. I couldn't do anything.
Couldn't put up a sex swing.
I couldn't put up a sex swing. I could put up a sex platform on a couple of roller skates.
Oh,
interesting. As long as it didn't engage with the, you know. I don't know why, because also Russ and Jordan, apparently their house was fine. They could put stuff up.
Oh,
but anyway,
that is curious, yeah.
Curiouser. And I can remember when the stuff came through, and you know, bearing in mind all the pre-prep and everything was done right in the teeth of lockdown, so there were no meetings. It was literally just stuff coming through on Zoom. And I can remember the editorial Zoom where they had to break it to me that all I could do was paint, effectively.
You were like, what
yeah,
am I
gonna
do?
Like, yeah. You know, I think they were expecting, you know, Edvard Munch's scream. What am I going to do? But actually, I thought, okay, I don't mind this. I mean, I think this is quite, you know, I like a conundrum. And I had a very specific colour palette at the back of my head that I was hoping to be able to use. I mean, I hoover stuff up as I go along. You know, I've got a very, very good memory. I've got a very visual memory. And if there's things that I see, and that can be weird stuff, you know, that could be, you know, just a sort of a random moment where you get a particular plant or a flower next to something else. And, you know, I've got a kind of a brain that's a bit like a smartphone, so I can just remember that. And I just remember a variety of colours, and I'm not going to give the game away at all, but a variety of colours that I just thought, well, that's quite surprising, and I actually really enjoy that. Will I ever be able to use it? And one of the nice things was when I received the before photographs, basically, yes, she obviously had a predilection for this particular kind of end of the spectrum. And so this is a weird one in a way, because it's the only one where I literally take a colour scheme that's already been established in the room. But I mean, super pimp it. I mean, absolutely turn the volume up on it like you wouldn't believe. And I still think that it's absolutely the most successful bit of storytelling that I do. Also, the other thing is that in this sort of general sense of not being intrusive, I thought, well, you know, I really like the idea of a lot of the kind of the Trondheim paint effects that we did so much in the 80s. You know, faux marble, faux bois. You know, I've always loved Macassar ebony. You know, and actually making Macassar ebony isn't difficult with paint. Using paint and using colour on the wrong side of things. So like on the inside of a vase rather than the outside of a vase, or on the back of a piece of acrylic so that it is, you know, when you put it back in the frame, actually it's behind glass. That suddenly gives you a completely different look to it. And so that was a real exploration of that. And I just remember loving every minute of that scheme, every minute of that sheet. It wasn't easy. There was a lot of stuff that didn't turn up. And we were in quite a difficult environment. You know, we were in a very urban environment. We were a long way from our kind of supply chain and power base and all that kind of stuff. Mm. But it just loved the way it came together. You know, there's something very addictive about that symphonic moment of crescendo where this space that's looked like nothing for, you know, 12 hours, 18 hours, 20 hours, 24 hours, and people come and go, ah, ooh, okay. You know, and you look around, you think, I want this to be done and I want this to be finished. But then there's that moment when suddenly the whole thing turns, you know, and you know that you're leading up to this grand finale, that, you know, the curtains are coming in, the furniture's coming in, the mirrors are going up, the plants are coming in. And it is just, everywhere you look, there's something falling into place. And it's like one of those incredibly complicated ancient lock systems that you see on Lara Croft Tomb Raider or something, with lots and lots of cogs and bolts and, you know, kind of dribbles of sand and a big boulder. That within about an hour, you know, you're just walking around and go, for goodness sake, I mean, this is absolutely unbelievable. And there is something, I mean, this is one of the things I suddenly realized, in fact, doing the first one. That moment of anticipation, of kind of slight trepidation, of you know, adrenaline, when the room is cleared and you're about to start and you know that nothing will stop this room being totally different in 48 hours. But how good is it going to be? You know, yeah. How beautifully done is it going to be? How viable is it going to be as somewhere for someone to live in? I mean, it's such a horribly overused word, but the journey that you and the room go through, and everyone else, you know, and again, this is what's been so great with you know, Team Geolux behind us, is that, you know, we've had a team in a way that we never had before. You know, in the old days, you'd have someone that come and help do a bit of painting, but then you can't find them again. You know, now it's like, right, you're doing that, you're doing this, you know, we're going to build this. We're, you know, come on, we're all doing this together. And I really, I'm sure it does, but, you know, I hope that people really get that sense when they watch it, that feeling that everybody is building it and growing it. Yeah. And I always do this thing with my rooms, which is that, you know, I'll have the camera guys breathing down my neck and the director and everything like that when we've finished and, you know, right, we've got to start lighting for the reveal. And I don't let them in the room for half an hour because I want everyone that's worked there to come in and take photographs and enjoy it and sit on the sofa. And, you know, I want them to really have that kind of closure, which you kind of don't get if you're not careful because they're dragged off to do something else. And I think this is the other thing as well with decorators, with builders, with carpenters. A lot of the time in the real world, you know, you're involved in a project at a certain stage, but actually you never see it finished. The joy of changing rooms is that it is so immediate. It is absolutely happening before your eyes. And I think that's quite addictive.
Mm. We heard from our fantastic Geolux Select decorators that you had some fantastic pet names for them, and particularly Steph. Can you remember what Steph's pet name was?
How could I forget it? It's tattooed on my butt. Thank you, Steph, for doing that with a rusty nail. She very quickly became the Sergeant Major because everybody was incredibly dedicated to what they were doing. I do feel that we, you know, with the rooms that I was doing with them, they got into it very quickly. They knew what they were doing. Everybody felt a real sense of pride with what was going on. And Steph was the most brilliant. She was the most brilliant kind of gatekeeper to what was going on in many ways. You know, she'd be the one that would be patrolling everybody else and making sure that everything was you know, done. And all she needed was a baton under her armpit, quite frankly. But yeah, I mean, everybody really enjoyed that sense of team. Although, as I pointed out, it might feel like a team, but fundamentally it's a freak show. So don't get too attached.
Led by Steph, by the sounds.
Yeah. But she was great. We didn't have, you know, the way things worked, it meant we didn't have the same decorators on every show. But because they were all back to back, there was often a sense of anticipation. And George would come to me and say, well, you know, I'm doing 2LG for the next one, but after that I'm doing you, and we're going to do this and we're going to do that. And everyone was so under the skin of their next project. It felt wonderful that that team, Geolux Select, were, you know, they were so excited about what they were being asked to do.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely. Yeah. And they've all...
Particularly by my
staff. Oh, well, obviously. I mean, obviously, goes without saying. And what we really want to know is, do you have any juicy gossip for us? Because everyone's been terribly polite, Lawrence, up until now.
Yeah, we have. I've been really worried about saying the bad stuff. But we know that you're gonna
reveal all.
To pull something out of the bag.
I would absolutely dish the dirt, as you know. But I'm trying to think of any dirt to dish. I mean, most of it's already come out. The big thing with Russell and Jordan is that they've brought a kind of a show tunes gloss to what we've been doing. You know, whenever I've ambled into them, they've been forever humming stuff from Oklahoma. And I think that they have a kind of a preciseness about how they look that I think does surprise people. And particularly in the context of changing rooms, because, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, I slap on my leather and then I'm on my knees cleaning the floor or, you know, scraping the artex off the ceiling or doing whatever to make the room. But I think Russell and Jordan found that a little bit more difficult as a concept. For them, you know, they are rather like Margot in The Good Life. They're exquisitely dressed for vegetable gardening, but not actually anticipating doing much with the trowel themselves, shall we say. The other thing is that I have to say that Anna is literally the clumsiest person I've ever met in my life.
There's been quite a few incidents, hasn't there, with Anna? You've had to tell her off.
Yeah, completely. Banner for wandering around with a cup of coffee or, you know, all over my cream carpet, woman. But I think she's got very excited by all the possibilities that interior decoration can provide.
Yes. Aww. Well, we had her in a few weeks ago, didn't we? And she couldn't stop pinching all of our sample pots of various different ranges we had lying around.
Which means that she will literally now have a living room that looks like the inside of a Joseph's Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Yes. I think you might be right. But it'll be all done fantastically in Dulux. So, hey, there you go.
Aww. We're coming towards the end of our wonderful chat and we could talk to you all day, Lawrence.
I could talk about myself all day as well, actually.
Yes, of course you could. And we'd love that. So on that note, you've led us really nicely onto our final question that we ask everybody who comes and joins us on the Let's Colour podcast. So we ask all of our guests, and we possibly might know the answer to this, but you may surprise us. Who knows? What is your favourite colour and why?
You see, like any doting parent, I can't have favourites.
Oh, we always say this, don't we?
We say this,
but we don't like to discriminate.
But you're lying, you see. Everybody, we all, as parents, we have a secret favourite.
Of course you do.
But we just never say
But the thing is, as well, as parents, that favourite changes on an hour-by-hour basis on a daily basis, depending on, you know, how good they've been or whether they've eaten their peas.
So give us the here and now, Lawrence.
Well, the here and now. I mean, you see, this is the crazy thing is that the minute I say I don't like a colour, I start liking it. And I was very, very energetically slagging off yellow the other day. And I've suddenly decided that I'm entirely in love with Imperial Yellow, with that fabulous, rich, protein-infused yolky yellow that was always specifically used for the emperor in Chinese courts. You get it in lacquer. There's a big vogue for it in the Regency period for carriages. It's one of the only yellows that works in the Northern Hemisphere. You know, anything that goes towards lemon, anything that goes towards primrose looks appalling. But actually, as long as you've got a lot of fat in your yellow, it can be so, so great. And it's actually that every other colour sits beautifully with it. If you get that yellow right, it's you know, as good as grey for bone structure. But I'm sure by 3 o'clock this afternoon, I'll completely have gone off it. And, you know, I'll be looking at something completely different. But I think the other thing is as well is that I think I do see things slightly different in that I tend to not necessarily have favourite colours, but I have favourite colour combinations and I have favourite colour relationships. And that's something, again, that's really, I think, explored through this series. But I colour is never something that you see on its own. Colour always has something to react against or to. Yeah. And the more you play with that, the more you enjoy that, the better it becomes, I think.
Mm. Wonderful.
Well, there we go. Yellow today. Who knows
actually,
tomorrow? So.
Now, that's old news. Totally gone off yellow now.
Oh.
So there we are.
Flash.
I'm now going kind of like sweet pea pink and a really powdery blue. And that happened within minutes.
Maybe you're turning into one of the two LG guys.
It could be. It could be. Yeah.
You're getting their vibes.
And who knows? Maybe I'll start affecting a crepe de chine blouse, some vegan shoes, a brooch and a show tune.
Well, we look forward to the next series then, I think. Let's look forward to that and see what happens.
Or maybe not. Maybe I'll still be that kind of rather leathery, bat-like creature in the background, sort of snarling and twirling my moustache.
Well, we like all of them. We like all of them equally. Yeah. So whoever you decide to come as, we look forward to, series two of Changing Rooms. Absolutely. Who knows?
Sir Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on, and we are so excited for what's to come. Thank you so much for your time today.
Pleasure and a delight.
We should move on and talk about how you at home can recreate some of these fabulous looks for yourselves using tips and tricks from our very own Dr. Dulux. In a change to the usual structure of this section, we'll be, or more specifically, I'll be probing Dr. Dulux to guide you through some of the questions and queries you might have on what you've seen in the latest episode. You might be thinking, how did they combine those colours to create that ombre effect? Do I need some cucumber water on my ceiling? Or should I rush out and buy up some marmoleum for my sofa? Well, wonder no more, because Dr. Dulux is here to help. Why, hello, Dr. Dulux.
Why, hello, Stephanie.
Are you ready for our decorating directive?
Yes, so ready, Steph.
Excellent. Let us crack on.
Surgery is open. Dr. Dulux will see you now.
My first question to you, Dr. Dulux, is around creating that beautiful and very striking ombre effect that we saw in Teresa and Andrew's home in the latest Cardiff episode. In the show, we saw Lawrence use Woodland Trail and Swan's Down from our paint mixing range to create that really beautiful, subtly graduated effect on the wall. Can you talk us through your top tips on how to recreate this, please?
Right. Well, the thing to do is to paint each of those colours up next to each other. So basically, if you're going to do an ombre effect, make sure that you've painted, you know, if it's half the wall, you painted the bottom half in one colour and the top half in the other colour, and make them meet in the middle. So you've got those two colours together. And then when you want to do the ombre effect, basically what you're doing is you're reactivating both paints. So you're going to make them both wet again, and you're going to use one brush to crisscross over the top to blend those two colours together while they're wet.
Yes.
On your own, it can be quite tricky. So having a little hand spray, just to waft over the surface just before you blend those two colours together will make the job really easy. And you get two different types of effect depending on the kind of brush strokes that you use. So actually, we see in the show the horizontal brush stroke, and that gives you a really kind of like real horizon line blend, quite a sharp blend, but you can also do a crisscross zigzag effect, and then it will give you a sort of softer blend. And another thing about ombre is it will work much better if the colours that you choose are similar in tone. So they're not too far apart from each other. They're from the same colour family and they're very similar in tone. So the closer they are in tone, the easier you will get a beautiful blend with the colours together. Not being too sharp makes it much easier to live with.
Great tips there. Excellent. Well, thank you so much for that, Doctor. Very well answered. If you at home would like to give that a go, I definitely prescribe a dose of our excellent how-to video on recreating this effect, which you can find on the dulux.co.uk website or on our Dulux YouTube channel. So definitely check that out if you want to recreate ombre for yourself. So, I have another one for you. Are you ready?
I am absolutely ready.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about Maria and Nick's home. One of the things that I actually did quite like was the striped ceiling effect. I thought this would be lovely, particularly in like a kid's bedroom or a really kind of funky effect on a ceiling somewhere in someone's home. It was a really striking design and a great way to add some interest to a space in a different way. Can you walk us through your top tips on using masking tape to deliver those super duper crisp lines?
Ooh, well, masking tape. So the first thing I'm going to tell you about is how to create those lines and follow those lines of masking tape. And you can do a ping string. So basically, if you take a piece of string, if you put chalk all over the string, so drag it across a piece of coloured chalk, and then mark where you want your line, so at the top of the wall, and then put a little drawing pin there into the string, pull the string tight to another mark at the other end of the wall where the stripe is, pull it tight against the ceiling and then ping it, and you'll get a line to follow.
Love
and
that.
Then in terms of the masking tape, always, we love our masking tape, don't we, Steph?
We love
we
our
do.
Masking
we
tape.
We love a good masking tape. So good quality masking tape, a sort of low-tack masking tape, a professional low-tack. And what I mean by low-tack is it doesn't stick too much to the ceiling or to the walls. So it doesn't, you know, don't risk ripping off any paint. And then I would always paint over the edge that you're going to add the colour to. So the masked edge, you know, paint over that with some of the background wall colour.
Yes.
Or the background ceiling
colour.
Very
important.
So if you've got a white ceiling, and in this case they've got a rock salt ceiling, so they painted the whole ceiling rock salt, put the masking tape on, and then painted over the edge of that masking tape with rock salt, and then put cucumber water on top of it. And then when you peel off that masking tape, it will give you a perfectly crisp line. And I know we've probably given this tip before, and you will see it in the how-to video, but honestly, it will be the best thing.
The best tip ever.
It is. It takes a little bit longer, but it will be just the best thing because it's gives you a beautiful straight line.
Absolutely. And everyone that we show the pinging of the string to thinks it's amazing, don't they?
I love a pinging string.
A pinging string is just where it's at. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that, does it, really? Who needs extra content on YouTube? Let's just watch some string pinging.
Yeah.
Excellent. Very good prescriptions dealt there, Dr. Dulux. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that. As before, you can find all of that information on the website or on the Dulux YouTube channel. So definitely check that out for more information.
Well, that almost brings us to the end of this week's episode.
Aww.
But don't worry, we'll be back at the same time next week for another juicy episode packed full of all the gossip from the latest instalment of Changing Rooms. And what else do we have coming up next week, Steph?
Well, listeners, in next week's instalment, we will be welcoming the fabulous design duo, Russell and Jordan, from 2LG Studio.
Yes.
I am so looking forward to meeting them again, as they were both incredibly nice and very well dressed, I might add.
Yeah.
We'll be chatting to them about all things Changing Rooms, of course, and getting the inside track on what it's been like being part of this iconic show.
These two are truly lovely, so we're really looking forward to that. We'll also be doing a deep dive into the latest episode, giving you our opinions on the designs and walking you through how to create elements of those designs for yourselves. I'm also going to get my white coat on for that, of course.
Of course, and the stethoscope.
Mm-hmm.
If you have enjoyed listening to today's show, then please head on over to your preferred podcast platform and hit that subscribe button so you can be kept up to date with further fantastic content from us, obviously, across the show. And it would be great if you can also leave us a short review to tell us about what you enjoyed. We really do genuinely love hearing your feedback, so please do take a moment if you can.
Yes, thank you so much for all of your support. And I suppose that's it from us here at Dulux HQ. So it's bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Please come back for another episode of
Let's Colour!